Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Well, we knew heading into last night's debate that Joe Biden would be feisty to help make up for the somnambulant President Obama in the first debate. We will begin today by playing some examples of that that also raise policy differences between him and Paul Ryan, and also differences on what the facts are. We will do this with two guests in a few minutes, Stephen Moore from the Wall Street Journal editorial board, and right now, Katrina VandenHeuvel, editor of The Nation. Hi, Katrina. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. How are you?
Good, thank you. And I said we're going to play extended excerpts, and I want to begin with a two-minute clip from near the end of the debate. Martha Raddatz asked them to explain their abortion positions in the context of their Catholic faith, which they did, Ryan in terms of life, Biden in terms of government respecting everyone's religious choices. Then they had this exchange that moved toward the Supreme Court. Biden speaks first.
Now, with regard to the way in which we differ, my friend says that I guess he accepts Governor Romney's position now, because in the past he has argued that there's rape and forcible rape. He's argued that in the case of rape or incest, it would be a crime to engage in having an abortion. I just fundamentally disagree with my friend.
Congressman Ryan.
All I'm saying is if you believe that life begins at conception, that therefore doesn't change the definition of life. That's a principle. The policy of a Romney administration is to oppose abortion with exceptions for rape, incest, and life of the mother. Now, I've got to take issue with the Catholic Church and religious liberty.
You have.
Why would they keep suing you? It's a distinction without a difference.
I want to go back to the abortion question here. If the Romney-Ryan ticket is elected, should those who believe that abortion should remain legal be worried?
We don't think that unelected judges should make this decision, that people through their elected representatives and reaching a consensus in society through the democratic process should make this determination.
The court... The next president will get one or two Supreme Court nominees. That's how close Roe v. Wade is. Just ask yourself. With Robert Bork being the chief advisor on the court for Mr. Romney, who do you think he's likely to appoint? Do you think he's likely to appoint someone like Scalia or someone else on the court far right that would outlaw abortion? I suspect that would happen. I guarantee you that will not happen. We pick two people. We pick people who are open-minded. They've been good justices. So keep an eye on the Supreme
Court. Was there a litmus test on them?
There was no litmus test. We picked people who had an open mind, did not come with an agenda.
Biden and Ryan from last night. Katrina VandenHeuvel, editor of The Nation, with us. What did you think of that exchange?
There are many things going on in that exchange, Brian. First of all, I have to say I was cheering when Vice President Biden brought up the Supreme Court. It is an issue we have not heard much about in this election, and it is perhaps one of the central issues, because the next president with four justices over the age of 70 will have the opportunity to shape this court for a generation. And it's not just on abortion, but we had a special issue 2 weeks ago called the 1% court. And this court has ruled in many ways, I would argue, enhancing the power of the 1% versus the 99%. I guess I was somewhat disappointed, Brian, in one thing, which is I thought Martha Raddatz was an exemplary moderator in many ways, pushing them in tough ways, tight ways in that format. But I wish that in light of the role of women in this election, that she had perhaps asked about the voting gender gap, or maybe whether we could have a, quote, war on women, or access to contraception, or the Stalled Violence Against Women Act. And instead, she chose to frame this question about, the social issue question in terms of religion and abortion. What it did illuminate, however, is, again, how Vice President Biden is forceful. I thought he was forceful in responding to the question. But Ryan, again, has to kind of walk away from his longtime absolute position on abortion, In fact, as listeners may know, he's really been one of the most extremist House members in terms of the redefinition of rape, akin in some ways to what Todd Akin has said about legitimate rape. And he has argued that there should be no exceptions in the case of rape or incest. Last night, he kind of walked that back in the context of how Mitt Romney is sort of doing the makeover or reinvention of Mitt Romney.
And I thought in that context it was an important exchange because Romney said the other day that he has no legislative agenda with respect to abortion. But Ryan sort of signaled by talking about abortion in terms of unelected judges.
That's right.
That
he
they would appoint.
That's right. I mean, that is a very, as you know, Brian, it's interesting because I think progressives, liberals, Democrats have not understood the power of the courts. And there is a political intensity gap. So last night, Ryan, in a sense, as you suggest, was signaling his own sort of anti-abortion bona fides, no matter what kind of, quote, moderation Romney is tacking to in the coming weeks to avoid scaring independent female voters. So there was a contradiction there. But I do wish, I have to say, that it was framed in a broader way because there are so many issues women care about. Yet this was framed as an issue of religion, not as much as of women's rights, though Vice President Biden did take it to the court, which I think is something that needs to be on people's minds.
Though I thought that it was interesting that she framed that in terms of them both being Catholic and the historic nature of both vice presidential nominees being Catholic, and that two Catholics running for such high office could have such different views. I think that possibly started a lot of conversations in a lot of Catholic homes last night.
Two things I thought of, I had to say, Brian, was one, think about how far we've come in the sense of the agitation around President John F. Kennedy when he was running in his religion and the great speech he had to make. I think it was in Texas, right, explaining his religion and its relationship to his role as a president. But the other thing I think that gets lost is, you know, don't forget that the nuns have wrapped Paul Ryan, former altar boy's knuckles, for peddling a budget that, quote, rejects church teaching about solidarity, inequality, and the choice for the poor and the common good. So that also is part of the religious discussion.
Yes, so the church is not a monolith. All right, another clip, this time to foreign policy. And this is a shorter clip on Afghanistan and the criticism that the Obama administration has announced a timetable for withdrawal, alerting the enemy to what they can do when.
We're sending fewer people out in all these hotspots to do the same job that they were supposed to do a month ago.
Because
we took 22,000 people out for them to do it.
We turned it over to the Afghan troops we trained. No one got pulled out that didn't get filled in by trained Afghan personnel. And he's conflating two issues. The fighting season that Petraeus was talking about and Admiral Mullen was the fighting season this spring. That's what he was talking about. We did not pull them out.
The calendar works the same every year.
It does work the same every year.
Katrina Vandenhoevel, your reaction to that?
You know, I mean, my reaction is there's a war weariness in this country. And I thought last night Ryan seemed intent on sort of issuing these broadside attacks on the failure of the Obama foreign policy for pursuing policies that in some ways last night and previously Romney and Ryan now claim they endorse. They're now talking about withdrawal from Afghanistan, following the president's policy and getting troops out of there, but don't want to tell anyone how they'll do it. I think there was some reference, I believe, on Ryan's part to precipitous withdrawal. I mean, I think that's folly and laughable in light of the 10-plus years we have waged a war that is not making us more secure in Afghanistan. And I think there was some real disingenuousness about Libya in light of the fact that the House Republicans sought to cut security for embassies. But in general, Brian, I have to say I find the whole foreign policy, national security policy debate off kilter. There were no questions last night in my mind about sort of the central challenges we face in engaging the world. There was a kind of 1950s mindset, certainly on the part of Ryan and Romney, where they think Russia one of the greatest geopolitical threats. I mean, we're dealing with climate crisis. We're dealing with nuclear proliferation that isn't going to be handled with occupation or military strikes. We're dealing with global joblessness. And all of these factors are not really brought up in the discussions of national security foreign policy. And Marcia Raddatz, again, because of her expertise, pushed hard on the military, the hardcore military questions, when I think we need broader discussion about how we engage with the troubled Middle East. On, right. You know, we've been on the side of autocrats and dictators and the security agencies over there for too long. It's going to take a while for this country to gain trust in that region again, and a smaller, quote, footprint would be valuable.
I thought it was notable, by the way, that in the last week, not in the debate, Romney seemed to say that he supports the 2014 withdrawal
yes.
plan and would not seek to extend the mission before drawing down many troops. Did you hear that?
Yes. So, I mean, it's kind of like they're issuing the broadsides, yet then agreeing, but not laying out, you know, what they would do. I do think in one area, the issue of Iran. Again, you know, President Obama has issued sanction after sanction. We have a hardcore sanction policy. What is their alternative? It seemed last night that Ryan, who, of course, you know, has been in debate camp and is a quick study on these issues, or has to be, was essentially saying, you know, our alternative would be war. And again, I come back to a war weariness on the part of this country. Though, you know, the Ryan Romney team now blames defense cuts, future defense cuts on Obama. I think this country's ripe for defense cuts of a bloated military budget right. that's larger than the 12, you know, other countries in the world combined. But that had to do, you know, with the sequester, a series of across-the-board spending cuts triggered by the Republicans' obstruction on the debt
right.
ceiling.
Before you go, did it do the Democrats any good last night, in your opinion? The CNN Instapoll had it about even. CBS had Ryan winning by almost 20 points. There are hashtags out there today like laughing Joe Biden and calm down. He was clearly amused at the very idea of Republicanism. Did he help the cause by being feisty? Did he hurt the cause by being a little over
helped.
The top?
He listen, Joe showed up. He was engaged, sharp, spirited. There was heat and there was heart. He talked about the 47% invoking his parents. He refused to let Ryan get away with mendacious statements. And I think the sense that he was present, engaged, feisty, speaking for millions, had to be done in order to, I think, certainly buck up the spirits of many who felt that the president in the debate last week was not engaged and missed so many opportunities. And so I think it was important in that sense.
Katrina Vandenhoevel, editor of The Nation, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we continue with debate excerpts and reaction. We're opening the phones. We'll take your calls in a few minutes at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And as we talk with people who you might call media elite, like Katrina Vandenhoevel and Stephen Moore from the Wall Street Journal editorial board, we have a hashtag on Twitter, Listener Elite. That's for you. So tweet your 140-character analysis of the debate at Brian Lehrer. Use the hashtag Listener Elite, and everybody can read everybody else's answers. In fact, knock yourself out. Post twice and take 280 characters. We'll call it an essay. The Great American Tweet. Hashtag Listener Elite. Joining us now is Stephen Moore from the Wall Street Journal editorial board. He also has a new book called Who's the Fairest of Them All? The Truth About Opportunity, Taxes, and Wealth in America. Hi, Steve. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me.
And let's begin with the moment in the debate when Joe Biden raised Mitt Romney's comment about the 47%.
I've had it up to here with this notion that 47%, it's about time they take some responsibility here. And instead of signing pledges to Grover Norquist not to ask the wealthiest among us to contribute to bring back the middle class, they should be signing a pledge saying to the middle class, we're going to level the playing field. We're going to give you a fair shot again. We are going to not repeat the mistakes we made in the past by having a different set of rules for Wall Street and Main Street, making sure that we continue to hemorrhage these tax cuts for the super wealthy. They're pushing the continuation of a tax cut that will give an additional $500 billion in tax cuts to 120,000 families. And they're holding hostage the middle class tax cut because they say we won't continue the middle class tax cut unless you give the tax cut for the super wealthy. It's about time they take some responsibility.
Little under a minute of Biden going off on the 47%. Little under a minute of Ryan's response.
Romney's a good man. He cares about 100% of Americans in this country. And with respect to that quote, I think the vice president very well knows that sometimes the words don't come out of your mouth the right way.
You're listening to special live coverage of the vice presidential debate on WNYC and New Jersey Public Radio.
We want to get people out of poverty, in the middle class, onto a life of self-sufficiency. We believe in opportunity and upward mobility. That's what we're going to push for in a Romney administration.
Vice President, look, I have a feeling you have a few things to say here.
The idea, if you heard that little soliloquy on 47%, you think he just made a mistake, then I think you're... I think I got a bridge to sell you.
All right. Obviously, that came from our special live coverage last night. Stephen Moore from the Wall Street Journal editorial board. As an economic conservative, or more generally, what was your reaction to that exchange?
Well, this is really what the whole presidential election is about, I think. And that was a nice back and forth between the two. I wish Paul Ryan had been a little bit more forceful when Vice President Biden was talking about, you know, we're the party of the middle class, to say, oh, wait a minute, if you're the party for the middle class, why is it that since President Obama came into office, the middle class has lost $4,500 in income, over a month's salary every year? Why is it that we have this incredibly high unemployment rate and so on? Really, I think this is an election about the Democrats talking about fairness and equality and the Republicans trying to make the emphasis about growth and how to get the economy going. In fact, that's why I wrote the book that I did, Who's the Fairest of Them All, because the point I make in my book is, look, the free enterprise system is what creates the most wealth and highest income and most jobs for Americans, and that is the fairest system of them all.
The way Romney put it in that tape with the big donors about the 47% is, I guess, the least charitable way that it could be spun, that we have half a nation of people who feel like victims and don't take personal responsibility for their lives. Is this close to your view, or how would you say the same thing better?
Okay, it's a great point. First of all, he didn't say it very artfully, but first of all, just as a factual note, it is true that 47% of tax filers are now paying have no income tax liability. And as a conservative, I think that's a problem. I mean, I'm as anti-tax as anyone, but I do think in this great country of ours, everyone who's a worker and a citizen and a voter should pay some income tax, even if it's only $50 or $100. And by the way, it's been both parties, Republicans and Democrats, who've taken off tens of millions of people off the income tax rolls. I do think that's a problem for our democracy, Brian. I think everybody should have, look, what do we pay our income tax for? Our income tax goes to pay for our national defense, our court system, so many of the other programs of the federal government. And now, it's true that, you know, almost 100% of workers pay payroll tax, no question about that, but that pays for Medicare and Social Security. And these other programs, I think, should be paid for in part by everyone. And I think that it is a problem that if we stay on the path we're on right now, within a few years, more than half of American tax filers will pay no income tax. And I think that's why I've always favored something more like a flat tax, where everybody pays a low tax rate with very few deductions, but everybody pays something.
People on the other side of that would say, when you take out the income tax but acknowledge that people in that zero bracket do pay sales
right.
tax and payroll
sure.
tax and et cetera, that they still pay a larger share of their income in taxes than people at, say, 250 plus.
Right. And this is something I've written a lot about. There's a chapter in the book about this. I mean, the reason that is a bit of a delusion is that, for example, when Warren Buffett says, well, I pay a higher tax rate than my secretary, is Warren Buffett makes his income mostly just as Mitt Romney does through their investment income, through the money they invest in companies. And most of those companies are corporations. And corporations pay, I think it was, I forget who said it, but, you know, corporations are not people, right? People pay taxes, not corporations. So what is left out of this is that we have a 35% corporate tax that's paid by the Mitt Romneys and the Warren Buffetts of the world, before they get their money so it's almost the corporate tax, like a
yeah.
withholding tax. And by the way, it's not just paid by rich people. Anyone who owns stock, and that's 100 million of us, we all pay corporate income tax before we get any kind of profit from the tax.
But still, as a share of their total income, as a percentage of their total income, maybe it's not as much as what people in the lower brackets are paying.
Well, but no, if you include the 35% corporate tax, then you're talking about a system where the richest people are paying close to, you know, a much higher share. But look,
if
Let
you
me give
impute
you one
that
other
to individuals.
If you can, Brian. If you think that the rich aren't paying, you know, their fair share, if you look at the taxes today in the United States, the income tax, the top 1%, the top 1 out of 100 Americans, pay 40% of the income tax. The top 10% pay 70% of the income tax. So it is a highly progressive tax system right now. I don't think the problem with our tax system is the rich aren't paying enough. They're paying a huge share. Actually, the problem is people's incomes have gone down so much that they're not paying as much tax because they don't have jobs. They don't have good-paying jobs. And that's a very big and real problem in terms of trying to balance this budget.
So how close is Mitt Romney to you on this, bottom line?
I don't know. I haven't talked to him about it. I like his tax plan a lot. And, you know, I like this idea he's come up with, Brian, you know, where what he wants to do is cut the tax rates by 20% for everybody, by the way. Not when Joe Biden says they're going to raise tax on the middle class, there's not a $2,000 increase in taxes for the middle class. There's about a $2,000 reduction in taxes for the middle class in that plan. But, by the way, the way it will be paid for is by getting rid of loopholes. Romney people finally have come up with a pretty good idea of how to do that, which is to create what I call like a super deduction, where you know everybody gets say 20. You can, you know, as Mitt Romney said, pick a number around $20,000. So everybody gets $20,000 of deductions. Now, if you're a family, let's say a four with a $75,000 income, you're not even going to hit that cap, so you'll be unaffected. Hmm. But if you look at somebody with a $10 million income like Mitt Romney, the average person with an income of $10 million has $4 million of deductions they take each year. If you cap that at $20,000, you're going to subject a lot more of their income to tax.
Let me ask you, and I know you got to go in a couple of minutes, what you thought the impact of the debate last night will be, and I'll frame this within a correction to something that I said. I misspoke earlier, and I said the CBS Instapoll last night had Ryan beating Biden about 50% to 30%. It was actually the other way around. So maybe Biden's emphasis on the middle class actually was very effective last night, and it'll help the Democrats. But what do you think?
I've seen polls all over the place in terms of who won the debate. The CNN poll had Ryan winning by about 3 or 4 percentage points. I think that I think that Biden would have won the debate, except for the fact that people were so turned off by his behavior. I just think it was beneath the dignity of the vice presidential office to be so rude, interrupt, over 80 times, the kind of smirking and laughing. I just thought that was a really poor on his part stylistically, although I thought he came across pretty well in terms of knowing the facts. I mean, Joe Biden does know the facts, especially on foreign policy.
Stephen Moore from the Wall Street Journal editorial board and author of a new book, Who's the Fairest of Them All? The Truth About Opportunity, Taxes, and Wealth in America. Thanks a lot. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Another clip now. Listeners, our lines are full, and we'll get to your calls in a minute. And again, you can use the hashtag on Twitter, Listener Elite, because not only the media elite should have their say. So the Listener Elite or Listener Elite, hashtag tweet at Brian Lehrer, and you can all follow what everybody else is posting. Let's listen to another clip now, and then we'll go to some calls. This is also on the economy, this time on the stimulus, where they mixed it up about fraud investigations and Ryan taking stimulus money for his district.
Look at just the $90 billion in stimulus. And the vice president was in charge of overseeing this. $90 billion in green pork to campaign contributors and special interest groups. There are just at the Department of Energy over 100 criminal investigations that have been launched into just how stimulus spends are being spent.
Martha, look, his colleague runs an investigative committee, spent months and months and months going into
this. This is the Inspector General.
Months and months. They found no evidence of cronyism. And I love my friend here. I'm not allowed to show letters, but go on our website. He sent me 2 letters saying, by the way, can you send me some stimulus money for companies here in the state of Wisconsin? We sent millions of dollars. You know why he said
you did ask for stimulus money?
Sure, he
correct?
Did. By the way,
on
he,
two
he
occasions,
took
we advocated for constituents who are applying for grants. That's what we do. We do that for all constituents who are applying.
Well, I love
grants.
That. I love that. This is such a bad program, and he writes me a letter saying, writes the Department of Energy a letter saying, the reason we need this stimulus, it will create growth and jobs. His words. And now he's sitting here looking at me. And by the way, That program, again, investigate it. What the Congress said was it was a model. Less than 0.4% waste or fraud in the program.
Biden and Ryan really mixing it up there on stimulus and hypocrisy and related issues. We're going to take a break. We'll go right to your calls. We have a couple of open lines if you want to get in. What did you think about the debate last night? You can react to any of the issues that were raised, any of the issues that weren't raised, and what you think the impact will be on the race in light of the Obama performance a week ago and the Romney performance a week ago. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And we'll hear one more example of them really mixing it up. And Biden, again, being extremely amused about the very existence of Republicanism, it sounds like, on Iran this time, coming up in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We'll get to the phones in a minute with your reactions to last night's debate, 212-433-WNYC. But we continue doing what we do on many post-debate mornings, and that is playing some extended excerpts so you don't just hear the sound bites. And we're going to play 3 minutes worth now, this time to foreign policy, which was really the centerpiece of last night's debate, at least as much as the economy, to some degree given Martha Raddatz's expertise. And this, again, shows not just how they differ on policy, but how Biden mixed it up really differently from the way that Obama did last night. And, of course, it shows Paul Ryan, too, on Iran.
Let's look at this from the view of the Ayatollahs. What do they see? They see this administration trying to water down sanctions in Congress for over 2 years. They're moving faster toward a nuclear weapon. They're spinning the centrifuges faster. They see us saying when we come into the administration, when they're sworn in, we need more space with our ally Israel. They see President Obama in New York City the same day Bibi Netanyahu is, and he's, instead of meeting with him, goes on a daily talk show. They see when we say that these options are on the table, the Secretary of Defense walked them back. They are not changing their mind. That's what we have to do, is change their mind so they stop pursuing nuclear weapons, and they're going faster.
How do you do it so quickly? Look, you both saw Benjamin Netanyahu hold up that picture of a bomb with a red line and talking about the red line being in spring. So can you solve this if the Romney-Ryan ticket is elected? Can you solve this in 2 months before spring and avoid nuclear?
We can debate the timeline. We can debate the timeline, whether it's that short of time or longer. I agree that it's probably longer. Number two, it's all
you
about credibility.
You don't agree with that bomb and what the Israelis might do.
I don't want to go into classified stuff, but we both agree that to do this peacefully, you got to get them to change their minds. They're not changing their minds. And look at what this administration does.
Do
Let me tell you what the Ayatollah sees. The Ayatollah sees his economy being crippled. The Ayatollah sees that there are 50% fewer exports of oil. He sees the currency going into the tank. He sees his economy going into free fall. And he sees the world for the first time totally united in opposition to him getting a nuclear weapon. Now, with regard to Bibi, who's been my friend for 39 years, the president has met with Bibi a dozen times. He's spoken to Bibi Netanyahu as much as he's spoken to anybody. The idea that we're not... I was in a... Just before he went to the UN, I was in a conference call with the president, with him talking to Bibi for well over an hour in stark relief and detail about what was going on. This is a bunch of stuff. Look, here's the deal.
What does that mean, a bunch of stuff?
Well, it means it's simply inaccurate.
It's Irish.
It is. We Irish call it malarkey.
Thanks for the translation.
We Irish call it malarkey. But last thing, the Secretary of Defense has made it absolutely clear. He didn't walk anything back. We will not allow the Iranians to get a nuclear weapon. What Bibi held up there was when they get to the point where they can enrich uranium enough to put into a weapon. They don't have a weapon to put it into. Let's all calm down a little bit here. Iran is more isolated today than when we took office. It was on the ascendancy when we took office. It is totally isolated.
Feisty Joe Biden and feisty Paul Ryan, 3 minutes worth on Iran from last night's debate. And Chris in Piscataway, what'd you think?
Oh, man, there's no way to call it any different. The old man killed, I'm telling you. Anybody who say anything different, they must have been watching a different debate. Ryan had no specific answers. The moderator was the best. I must compliment her. I mean, I don't want to jump on your cousin.
quote, unquote.
I must say, she was wonderful. And let me make a suggestion that all debates now should have women moderators, because I believe she definitely did better.
That's it? You generalize from her to all women on earth and from Jim Lehrer to all men?
I'm telling you, last night, I almost jumped out the window. That's how much excited I was. I love what Joe Biden did. He was aggressive. He wasn't timid. He wasn't thinking of an answer. He had the answers right there on his tip.
Was he ever over the top to your ear? People called him a bully.
No. And I'm telling you, the Republicans are saying that. But I watched the Obama and Romney debate the last time. Romney was also interrupting Obama. Not that much, I will admit, but he was also interrupting, and nobody said nothing about that. Everybody was, he won, he beat Obama. Biden, his expression was golden. He didn't have to speak. Anybody looking on the television would say, look at this guy. He knows that this guy's saying is nonsense. You know, and I love the malarkey. I'm about to print a shirt and walk around with this thing right now. This was gold. This was beautiful. And anybody who says something different, they were watching something else.
I think we're going to hear somebody saying something different next. But, Chris, thank you very much. By the way, on the body language, we'll do another segment later in the show specifically about the nonverbal optics of last night's debate and compare it to last week's. Terry in Wanacue, you're on WNYC. Hello, Terry.
Hello, Terry. I always enjoy your programs, and I thank you for being on the air.
Wait, you're Terry, right?
Yes, I am.
Good.
My feelings truly completely opposite the gentleman that just called. I felt the vice president conducted himself poorly, representing politics as usual. While Congressman Ryan was calm, collected, and explained his program and what he stands for much more clearly, I felt that the vice president was very dismissive of Ryan. His smile was very annoying to me. His dentist should have been on the program as well. But I feel that is not the way a vice president should conduct himself. His demeanor was extremely poor, and I was insulted by it.
Did they land one way or the other with you on content?
They both explained their programs. But I felt that Congressman Ryan was much calmer about it, and I could understand a lot more of what he was saying than a vice president was very bellicose. He was very hyperactive, and I just did as far as the content was concerned, it was repeating more of the same with a lot of figures that people simply don't grab a hold onto. The fact is that I felt that I'm glad that I was able to hear it, and I hope that the American people will see through the vice president and feel the same way as I do.
Terry, thank you very much. Terry and Chris, both of you keep calling the show. We appreciate your calls always. Joel in Peekskill, you're on the air. Hi, Joel.
Yes, Brian. I thought that, as the last caller just said, that Biden was totally out of order. I've done an awful lot of debates in my life, and your conduct is almost as important as what you have to say. As regards to his assertion that Ryan was in favor of this program because one of his constituents asked for a grant, Ryan has no choice.
Oh, the stimulus. Well, what Biden was trying to do was point up hypocrisy because Ryan so loudly opposed the stimulus, but then looked to take what he could for his district from it.
Well, it was an absolutely empty point because Ryan's first position is to represent the people within his district. If somebody asks him for that grant money, he has no choice but to ask for that grant money. That's part of his job as a congressman in that district. And Biden realizes that. It was a sophistry without any doubt, you know. And
it's something that came up in the 2008 race. Remember when Sarah Palin talked about the bridge to nowhere and how she turned down federal money, and some of the governors who were deciding not to opt into the Medicaid expansion and Obamacare are saying, we're going to turn down all that federal money because it's big government and we don't believe in it.
No, that's the position that they can take. That's perfectly proper. But if you're a congressman for a district and the person that has voted for you, or whether they didn't vote for them, but you represent that district, you have no choice to follow what they're requesting.
Joel, thank you very much. Call us again. Charlie in Newark, you're on the air. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, it's a pleasure to call. And I just wanted to say, disagreeing with the last two callers vehemently, I think that Biden was superb in the debate. I think that if he seemed aggressive, that's politics, you know. Romney was aggressive in the first debate and won. And people said that Obama looked weak because he didn't respond. Well, this is a response.
Maybe there's something in between. Like some people are saying Biden was feeding the base, trying to get the enthusiasm back up among real Democrats so a lot of people turn out to vote. But it wouldn't have been so appealing to a lot of independents who might see that as over the top or bullying or condescending, but that wasn't his point. What do you think?
Well, I actually, up until this election, I was a registered Republican, and I've been a registered Republican all my life up until this very election. And perhaps I can be considered independent, or perhaps, I am a registered independent now. Mm-hmm. And honestly, the Republicans to me now just seem like they're whining and complaining. And, I think this criticism comes directly from that, you know.
And Charlie, thank you very much. We're going to leave it there. Folks, keep it going on our comments page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show or post to Twitter. Use the hashtag, because we don't want to only hear from the media elite. We want to hear from the listener elite. So use the hashtag listener elite and keep posting about the debate. And we'll come back to it next hour, especially to talk about those visual optics from last night. But coming up next, Kevin Smith talks about his life in what? Oh, no. Coming up next, we will do a follow-up on our 30 issues series this week on big government, and it is a game. You call in, we'll name an expenditure of the federal government, see if you can tell us what percentage of our tax dollars go to it. Stay with us.